It's all about a level playing field. And it's all about choosing between raising taxes or getting folks to pay what they owe to do what folks think the government should do.
Hi, I'm Jim Doyle, president of Business Forward, and you're listening to the Business Forward podcast. Business Forward helps local business leaders fix Washington by bringing Washington to them. Subscribe to our podcast to hear conversations with policy experts, elected officials, and business leaders about important issues like climate action and affordable healthcare.
In this episode, Business Forward hosted former IRS commissioners Fred Goldberg Jr. and Charles Rosati for a briefing and Q&A on modernizing the IRS and shrinking the tax gap. They answered questions from business leaders across the country on topics ranging from the unequal distribution of the tax gap to what an updated IRS would look like. They also discussed how business leaders can get involved with the proposals covered in the briefing. We hope you enjoy the conversation. Hello, everyone. I'm Liz Fairchild, Executive Director of Business Forward, and today we are pleased to host former IRS Commissioner Charles Rosati and former IRS Commissioner and Assistant Secretary for Tax Policy at Treasury, Fred Goldberg Jr., with us today. So thank you again for joining us, and Mr. Rosati, we'll start with your remarks.
Well, thanks, Liz, and thanks for inviting me to talk to these business leaders around the country. I am pretty comfortable talking to business people because that's what I did for most of my life. I'm kind of a temporary visitor to the tax scene, if you will. Just to say where I came from, I started a business in IT services, and it was a small business for a long time, later grew into a somewhat larger business. And before that, I came from a small business family. Both my mother's side and my father's side owned their own businesses. And I started working there when I was 13. So I have a pretty good idea what small business and other business is. And somehow I find myself as IRS commissioner for 5 years. That was almost 20 years ago. So what am I doing back in this tax world now? In the last couple of years, I just got back into being interested in what was going on because things had gotten really bad in terms of how it's affecting the average taxpayer. 25 years of just cutting the budget of the IRS has shown it just doesn't work. What it means is just that everybody who has to deal with the IRS, and almost everybody does at some point, they just get bad service and get really frustrated. And on top of that, the amount of taxes that are owed but not paid, that's what we call the tax gap, has really grown to astronomical proportions. I mean, you can't even talk about trillions, but it's $7 trillion over 10 years. So what do we need to do? If Congress is now considering providing some consistent funding over the next decade for the IRS, and if that happens, then the IRS has to do their job, which is provide first-rate service to millions of taxpayers who are doing their best, most people are, to pay the bill. And then to pinpoint the enforcement resources on those who are not paying. And fortunately, with technology, you can do a better job with that today with that funding. So that's where I'm coming from.
Perfect. Thank you, Charles. And now I'd like to hand it over to Mr. Goldberg. You have the floor.
Thanks, Liz. And thanks, Charles. Also appreciate your putting this together. Appreciate all the time the business folks are devoting to this issue. Like Charles, I grew up in the Midwest. Like Charles, I grew up in a family of folks who do small business. And small business really is the backbone for everything this country stands for. I'd just like to pick up on Charles's comment about service. The law is complicated. It can be burdensome. And the service piece is as important to shrinking the tax gap as dealing with those who aren't paying their fair share. Businesses are put through all sorts of hassles to do all of this. Most businesses are trying to get it right. And to be clear, this what we're going to be talking about today is as much about improving service and as much about, far more about using technology than it is just more audits. And it's focused on the high end. That's where the issues are. That's where the time should be devoted. And another piece that we'll get to maybe is that part of this is also all about taxpayer protections. And we'll walk through that. It's not just more money for audits. That's exactly not what this is about. It's service protecting taxpayers and going after the high-end folks who should be paying a lot of money but aren't.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Fred. And it's great to have you both with us. So as I mentioned, we received a number of questions from our network, and I'm going to batch some of them as appropriate, just so we can get through as many as possible. So first up, we have a question about
feasibility in our current system. Most Americans report all of their income and pay what they owe, and we're talking about a small group of taxpayers who happen to be evading taxes in similar ways when discussing the tax gap. Is that right?
That's basically right. Yes. It's most people pay what they owe. Actually, most people don't have much choice because it's withheld or they get reported on, and even everybody else pays. But there are a significant number who underpay. It's not mean they're all criminals, but you know, they take whatever opportunities that they have and they just underpay. And that adds up to a real big amount of money.
You got a world, Liz, where 90%, 85% of everybody's paying what they owe. How can you live with a world where 10 to 15 aren't? That's the story, and it's high time to deal with it.
Got it. So moving into kind of the urgency of the conversation that we're having today, we have problems with our infrastructure, a climate crisis ongoing, and outdated immigration laws, amongst many other things. Why should we be prioritizing modernizing the IRS? Why should Congress and our president push this rock up such a steep hill?
Well, let me take a crack. I mean, there's two basic points. One is everybody in America, just about, you know, every business and every individual deals with the IRS and is required to deal with the IRS. And it's just completely unfair in two ways to allow the current situation to exist. One is that you're asking people who are trying to pay to make it even, you're making it even harder for them to do that, which is what Fred's point about the service. The other thing is the amount of money that's being lost by the people who are not paying, even though it's a small fraction of people, it's a gigantic amount of money. Let me explain it this way. The amount that is lost in the tax gap is equal to all the income taxes that are paid by the lowest earning 90% of taxpayers. In other words, if anybody that makes less than $145,000, all of your income taxes is being lost effectively, the equivalent amount by the small minority who are not paying because they're the ones that are in the top brackets. So that's got to be made up somehow. And, you know, at the time, as you say, where we have these other pressing needs, it's either going to be made up by taxing more to the people that are already paying, or you have an alternative to at least try to collect some of that money that's left on the table.
It's all about a level playing field. And it's all about choosing between raising taxes or getting folks to pay what they owe to do what folks think the government should do.
Makes sense. And when you're saying that they are not paying, is this a collections issue or are we talking about just a misunderstanding of what they owe? Can you kind of explain what that piece of it means?
Yeah. There is some collections, but that's a smaller amount. The part that we're really talking about, and especially at the upper brackets, you know, wealthy people can pay the tax bill if, you know, they have the cash. They just don't report it all. I mean, it's very simple. I mean, you know, they have different ways of doing that. It's not only on individual returns, but on some business returns. They just don't put all their income down. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. But, you know, they may, in some cases, they may not even file a return, but that's a smaller percentage. Most of those that are not fully paying are the ones that are taking their own little discount. There's so many ways you can do that.
And Liz, an important part of this is it's hard, it's complicated. We're not talking perfection at the margin. We're not talking at the last $1,000. Folks do what they do. They do the best they can do. We're talking about the other end of that spectrum where you're talking millions of dollars, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. Most small businesses live with more, I'm a conservative guy, live with more regulation, more burden than you can imagine. But that's not what this is about. My daddy sold plumbing supplies. He thinks he paid what he owed. The son of a whatever down the street was cheating. How fair is that to a business person? It ain't fair at all. And then, oh, by the way, Freddie, we're going to raise your taxes. It's a terrible narrative. And that's what this proposal is about.
I'll tell a story. When I was IRS commissioner, you know, I guess we like to tell stories. We had more than one occasion a group of business people come in that operated certain businesses, certain kinds of service businesses in particular. And they were complaining that the IRS wasn't doing enough enforcement. I said, what do you mean we're not doing? They said, we are trying to scale up our business, you know, and we've got guys down the street that are just, you know they're not paying their tax and we can't compete. And, you know, at that time, we didn't have a lot of tools to deal with that. It was just, you know, really not possible. Today, it's easier to find and pinpoint where those problems are. In other words, where the people are that are not paying. But that's what I mean by the level playing field. I mean, I can't believe it. When I was IRS, people coming in saying you're not doing enough enforcement. The problem is it wasn't level. And, you know, what we are all about is trying to make it more level so that the people who are honestly paying are not at a disadvantage.
Understood. I remember hearing a stat about 1 in 6 tax dollars currently isn't being paid. Just the scale of it, the scale of the tax gap is enormous, larger than I thought it was before I really understood what was happening. So moving into what modernizing the IRS means, I think people hear it, better service, you've both mentioned, more kind of informed audits. Is it reasonable for people to hear, when they hear modernizing and funding the IRS, hiring more agents and beefing up the IRS software, and think that actually might be bad for me? Why would taxpayers want a better IRS, more resources?
Well, there's two parts to this. Okay, one part, Fred was talking about just most people that are trying to pay their tax at some point have to interact with the IRS, and that's currently a very frustrating experience. So that's important because that affects most people. But the other thing is, another thing that affects people is getting audits that when you don't need to be audited. This is something that very few people understand, but the IRS systems are so old in the way that they, you know, analyze where there's a problem, where there's an audit, that there's so many audits done that don't even need to be. For example, 20%, up as many as 40% of businesses, they end up being an audit that didn't need to be done because there was no problem. So, I mean, what's the wasteful thing that you can think of? Somebody shows up and says, we're going to audit you, and then it turns out they didn't need to in the first place. So, you know, that's one of the things that the technology can do. It can pinpoint, that's my word, where the problem is. You know, it's not everywhere. It's not exactly a needle in a haystack, but it's a big haystack.
Got anything on the hiring more agents piece too?
Liz, part of it is, sure, there are going to be more agents. Right. If you look at the decline in agents over the last 10 years, it's breathtaking. So of course you need more agents. But this is really about, if agents do what they've always done, they're always going to get what they always got. That's why the focus is on technology. That's why the focus is on data. And then I think your last question was polite. Because another way to ask the question is, why should we trust the IRS to get it right? I mean, that's a fair question. That was my job for a while. It was Charles's job for a while. And that means that folks have to pay attention to what the IRS is doing. That's the role of Congress. That's the role of the Treasury Department. That's the reason to add additional taxpayer safeguards in the legislation when it is enacted. Is it going to be perfect? No, of course not. But you can set standards. And part of the standards are focusing at the high end. Part of the standards are saying better service. Part of the standards are saying give the taxpayer the protect. Why should a taxpayer with just a letter wait 7 months to get her problem sorted out? That's fixable. It is 100% fixable. And you can put the metrics in place. One would guess every person on this phone has a way of measuring his or her performance and the success of his or her enterprise. You can put those measures in place for the IRS and you can hold them accountable for it. Have they done it before? Yes. Can they do it again? Yes. But somebody better be riding them to get it right.
And that's very helpful. So I'd like to move into a conversation too about deterrence versus audit. So going back to the saying, agents that are being hired to replace the ones that they've lost in the past, the real benefit here, the real driver in actually reducing the tax gap, as I understand it, isn't audits, it's deterrence. Can you explain how that works?
Well, let me take a go. We actually like to think of the word as compliance. What we want is everybody to pay what they owe. It's not a matter of punishing. Nobody, you know, there are a few really bad people out there, you know, in any field that need to be, you know, punished for really serious crimes. But that's not what this is about. Most of it is just making sure people are more accurate. And, you know, some people may take the discount. We don't really want to take the discount because most people are not allowed. So how does compliance work? Most people pay 95 to 99% of what they owe because they get a report like a W-2. If you're a wage earner or a retired person, you get that information. The IRS gets it. So you both have the same information. When that situation exists, that kind of income, there isn't any big problem. There isn't any even need to audit because it's 95 to 90% accurate. They both have the same information. So part of the solution is increasing, you know, the use of that kind of information so it's all shared at the same level, and then you really don't even need to do as much auditing. That's what we call voluntary compliance. You know, people use the word voluntary compliance. Doesn't mean that, you know, everybody pays taxes just because they like to. It just means they know they have to. And when they have the same information as the IRS, it works very, very well. It's when it's vague and opaque that it gets complicated. And that's where you get into these audits that everybody doesn't like.
You know, Liz, ever since the Garden of Eden or whatever, I mean, temptation is temptation. And when honest taxpayers know that the IRS is essentially reduced audit coverage by 70, 80%, and when compliant taxpayers know that folks down the street, and they know that the very wealthy aren't paying what they owe, well, temptation's walking in the room with a cousin. And that needs to change. So deterrence in part is, well, the IRS knows exactly what I made. Well, yeah, you betcha I'm gonna pay. But if you're a taxpayer and you know that the IRS is gonna be serious and effective in trying to bank and going after taxpayers who are not nibbling at the margin, you're going after taxpayers who are talking, you know, 7, 8, 9 figures. Well, that's gotta make you feel better and more comfortable that you can keep doing what you're supposed to be doing. That all of those pieces are, there's an enormous amount of data out there that says when the IRS is doing the kind of direct activity, it encourages others to be comfortable doing right. And that's all of those are pieces. And it's also service. If I'm getting jacked from here to Sunday, I get kind of annoyed. And what's that lead to? So all of these pieces weave together.
I love that walking into the bar with a cousin. That's gonna stick with me. So we've talked a lot about compliance. I wanna make sure we address the difference between compliance and tax code. We've gotten a lot of questions from the network on changes to the tax code. And can you relate how today's discussion on compliance and modernization compares to those joining today's briefing who are really interested in the tax code itself? And just kind of connect the dots and explain how they're two different concepts.
I was trying to think about this because I saw that question about how I'd think about it as a business. So here's the situation. You have a business where, you know, almost all of your customers are furious with you and they're trying to do business with you and they're very unhappy because you're not giving them what they need. And then you have a lot of customers that are basically causing you to hemorrhage cash because they're not even paying their bill. Okay, that's the situation we have today. If you're the business guy, you're not going to fix that by tinkering with your price list. You're not going to, you know, fix those kind of problems by changing, you know, how you charge for your services. You have to fix the basic system that allows you to even stay in business. That's the situation we have with the IRS. There are probably many, many things that could be done to make the tax code better. But if you have a situation where whatever the tax code is, you know, people can't effectively deal with it, whether they want to or not, then you have a big problem. And as a matter of fact, what really will happen is if nothing is done with the IRS, and in order to fix our financial problems, they end up raising the taxes, it will only mean that the people who are already complying and already frustrated will pay more. So, you know, there are two different things. There's many things you could do to make the tax code better, but, you know, you can't wait for that, you know, if your whole place is falling apart.
That makes sense. Fred, anything on those that are most curious about tax code and how you can get them excited about compliance?
Yeah, Liz, I was very fortunate in my career because I both saw administration from the IRS perspective and I saw policy from the Treasury perspective. And there are a whole host of policy issues. But the real world happens with where the IRS lives. It's folks filing returns, it's folks trying to navigate things. And as Charles says, it's a mess right now. And you can debate about all of these policy issues that are out there. There's never going to be complete agreement. The only agreement is all else equal, taxes less, not more. That's what folks want. And the best, quickest way to get to that state is to deal with these kind of compliance issues. Now that I've ducked that question, we can move on, right?
Perfect. Thank you. So let's look at the tax gap itself. In earlier briefings on this topic, we found it kind of difficult to explain just how lopsided the distribution of the tax gap actually is. So Could you walk us through how concentrating underreporting is amongst highest earners, for example?
Yeah. Well, I can say it's very, very simple. I mean, of the total amount of dollars that are underreported, at least 85%, I say at least because their numbers are not, at least 85% is from the top, 25% of people. So that's pretty constant. And you really, if you wanted to go further, the vast majority would be from the top 3%. So, and it's not everybody in the top 20, by the way, it's not everybody in the top 25% because those people are in a sense being unfairly treated too, because most people even in the top brackets are paying, but within those brackets, the minority that are not really causes a lot of loss to the treasury. So you can think of it that way. The top quarter is most of it, almost all of it. And even more so, the top 3% is a large fraction of it.
Understood. I know that we got a couple of questions focused specifically on the top 1% to 3%. So thank you for addressing that. And just going quickly back to audits, it seems that the audits are focusing right now on low-hanging fruit. So the other side of that distribution, especially around like EITC. Can you just kind of address how the distribution of the tax gap is kind of flipped from the resources of the IRS currently to enforce what they have on the books?
Yeah, Liz, you're correct. I mean, the audit coverage for low-income taxpayers is high, or in many parts of the country, higher than the audit coverage at the upper end. And, having ducked your legislative question, those rules are very complicated and simplification would improve it. There are obviously issues at that level as well. But if the question is, should the IRS invest $5,000 to collect $4,000, or should the IRS invest $5,000 to collect $100,000? I don't think that's a hard question.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So let's bring it back to those that we have on the call today, small businesses. We've had many questions from those on the line looking for services that'll help them comply better with the IRS, and those that are concerned that they're going to be hit hard with any new requirements that might be introduced. So we've gotten a couple of questions. I'll just read a couple of them out loud and you can decide how you want to answer them between the two of you. But from Arun in CEO of RJ Telecom in California asks, as small business owners are pressed for time, is it possible to have an FAQ, a mini kind of Google Q&A just for businesses like myself? From Angela Romeo, a CEO in Georgia, she's asking, what's the most important takeaway we need to apply to our business's practices from this modernization proposal? So I'll let you two kind of tackle how this affects small business compliance.
Well, I mean, on the first question, of course there is. I mean, there's no reason. I mean, the IRS is not that much different in the way it operates. It's a government agency, but it should be able to operate the way any kind of good business that you deal with, like an Amazon or your good banks. So yes, FAQs, self-service options, callback numbers instead of waiting online, secure email so that you can communicate if you have a question instead of sending letters and taking 6 months. Those are all things that people deal with every day in the rest of the world. And actually the IRS did some pretty good things, quickly because of COVID that they'd never done before. So that was actually pretty good, but there's so much more that can be done. That's really a lot where the financing comes in, because without having funding, you can't invest in technology, you can't do that. But there's probably, your owner could have probably list besides the FAQs, probably 10 more things like that they could do. And yes, they could all be done. And a few of them are being done, but the funding, could really make that better. And I think I'll pivot the next question back to Fred so that he can think about it while I was talking.
I want to touch the first question again, or maybe I'm touching the second question. Is so many discussions about tax, and importantly, so much input that is received from the business community in general and the small business community in particular, focuses on what are the rules? The rule now about the 20% reduction for income for businesses, all of this really matters, because that is you look at your return and you see what happens. The business community, especially the small business community, has the platform to focus on how can this government make our lives easier in complying. And I was just struck from the time I was there. Charles told the story about small business saying we need more enforcement. It is a certainty in my judgment that if businesses like the ideas you're laying out, and there got to be a dozen more, why don't you get into the 21st century like we are and figure out ways to make it easier? You can't have email exchanges with the IRS. You just can't do it. Well, everybody else figured out how to do it. And I think that the podium that this group community has, take it, use it, tell the IRS how to make it easier. And if that doesn't work, tell your congresswomen on Treasury how to make it easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll give you one example. Just tell them to do one thing. Don't send me a letter telling me there's something wrong with my return unless you guarantee that I can get somebody on the phone to explain what the problem is. Tell me, don't send the letter unless there's somebody on the other end to answer the letter, okay? If you put that one thing in the law, I guarantee you that the whole thing would change. And you know what? If you were a business and you sent something out to your best customers and told them, you know, that they owed you money and they said, no, I don't owe you money. And then you had nobody to talk to when you got there and you kept getting more letters, you'd be really angry, wouldn't you? Well, that happens every day at the IRS. And it's, believe me, it's not the fault of the IRS. It's the fault of the way that the Congress has, you know, insisted that these things be done without any funding to do it. So just change that one thing. Say no letters unless there's somebody guaranteed to answer the phone in 5 minutes.
If folks check the Shrink the Tax Gap website, you'll see that one of our recommendations is exactly what Charles just said. And it's not terrible government, it's terrible business. And that is doable. If you're not going to answer the phone and resolve questions and connect the person with somebody who can resolve the questions, stay out of my face. I mean, I think that's common sense.
And also on the audits, don't send somebody out. You know, you talked about agents, more agents. We're getting a little exercised here because we know what's wrong. We've been there. You know, don't send out agents to ask you for information that they already have. Okay. Don't waste my time, you know, getting information about my finances. Get it from where you have it, right inside the IRS, before you bother me. And by the way, if you did that, you probably might not be bothering me because you'd find there wasn't anything wrong with my return. It's not the fault of the agent that shows up. Believe me, the guy who or gal that shows up is trying to do a job, you know, that they're told to do, but they absolutely do not have the tools to do it the way they should. I mean, you know, you would not tolerate that from your external auditor. If you were a business that had a, let's say, a CPA firm that was auditing you, you wouldn't tolerate them operating that way, wasting your time with information they already have and asking questions they don't need to know because they already have the answers. This is the kind of thing that is really frustrating to people. And by the way, it's very inefficient for the IRS. It uses the little resources they have in a way that doesn't produce anything. So these are, you know, the kind of things that need to be fixed and can be.
You're bringing the passion for IRS service that only former IRS commissioners could bring to the table. So I really appreciate that. Before we move off of small businesses specifically, I just want to make sure we address a common question we also get, which is who bears the burden of some of these IRS modernization proposals out there? So my understanding is it's the financial institutions that are responsible for some of the reporting back to the IRS.
Oh, for the reporting? It would be just financial institutions. The taxpayers don't have to do any. I mean, they already produce 1099s. If you have $10 of interest in a bank account, they send you a 1099. That's all we're talking about. They do that every day. It's just a few more numbers.
The IRS gets around 3.3 billion information returns already. With some law changes last March, it's going to go up. And that doesn't include W-2s. And it's not new information. Nobody has to go find the information. It already exists. These institutions already got it. So the burden thing isn't, nobody likes to be regulated or be told to do anything. At least having been appointed by Ronald Reagan and by George H.W. Bush, I don't like to be told to do anything by the government, but it's a reality and it's not a partisan issue. I mean, it's just, if you do it right, it gets the net gets the IRS off the back of folks. And in particular, it gets the IRS off the back of folks trying to get it right.
Understood. So I just want to make sure we have time for a final question. Before we go, can you both kind of tackle this question from our business leaders, which is how can they get more involved with the proposals we discussed today around shrinking the tax gap?
Tell your friends. Tell your members of Congress, tell the administration, small business community in the United States is an enormously powerful group in this country. And folks will listen. And now's the time. Because if this doesn't happen, it's just going to get worse. The service is going to get worse. The tax gap is going to get worse. The lack of a level playing field is going to get worse. The corrosion of the revenue to do what ultimately the citizens want the government to do isn't going to be paid for without tax increases. But folks, listen, businesses live in the real world. Lawyers have never lived in the real world. But the issues that businesses face every day, whether it's Charles's stories about, hey, it's use technology, but you all have the power to move this. And where you think the IRS can reduce burdens, tell them how. Support a provision that says you don't send letters unless you're going to get an answer back and get it resolved. And this is just my experience, my time, particularly at Treasury. The small business community, folks not in the billionaire, 100 millionaire category, hopefully there's some on the phone like that, but it's really businesses that always can have a seat at the table on this kind of stuff. And the members of Congress care about what you have to say, so speak up.
Yeah, and just to make the point that this is the time to do it because, you know, these issues come and go. Right now, people are sort of focused on this because there's a lot of, you know, anger, concern about the deficit as well as about the problems with the IRS. And there's an opportunity to really make a difference right now. When I say right now, in the next couple of weeks even, because they're writing these laws right now and they're either going to do it right or they're going to, you know, pass it off and then we won't get another chance to fix it for a long time. And then we're going to be in even worse trouble. So if you're interested in this, do it right now. Do it in the next 2 weeks, because that's when they're really thinking about it.
This is the most credible part of the infrastructure pay for. And you can, all the other stuff, you can think what you want to think. But roads, bridges, access to technology, the hard, quote, hard infrastructure. Are all these, quote, pay fors, some are real, some aren't. This one is real. And if it doesn't happen, it's going to be harder to get that piece done. And that's the piece where everyone agrees it should happen. And now's the time. It's going to play out over the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Thank you both so much. So if you are interested in getting involved, like Fred and Charles just laid out, Business Forward is here to help. Thank you, Fred, Charles, and everyone who joined today's briefing. And we look forward to working with you again soon.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. For more information on Business Forward programming, visit businessfwd.org. The Business Forward podcast is a production of Business Forward, hosted by me, Jim Doyle, produced and engineered by Alexi Lippman and Alex Pastanen. Thanks for listening. See you next time.